What would you do if you knew the world was ending tomorrow? Most people imagine grand gestures, scaling mountains, reconciling with estranged family, seeking spiritual salvation. Marcel Proust had a different answer. Suddenly, life would seem wonderful. Not because anything changed externally, but because the threat of loss would strip away our habitual blindness to everyday beauty. 4 months after offering this insight, Proust died of pneumonia at 51, having spent his final years completing a 3,000-page masterwork that teaches us how to stop wasting time before it runs out. His message is urgent yet gentle. We don't need a catastrophe to appreciate life. We simply need to learn how to pay attention. While Proust's father healed bodies with practical health manuals, advising teenage girls on proper posture and the dangers of corsets, Marcel sought to heal souls through literature, but not in the way you might expect. He didn't believe books should prescribe solutions like medical textbooks. Instead, they work through recognition, seeing ourselves reflected in characters who lived centuries ago or continents away. Proust's narrator admits that when his lover wasn't nice to him, he became nasty instead of sad. Suddenly, your petty relationship fights don't seem uniquely shameful. This is the Marquis de Lau phenomenon, finding yourself in art, whether recognizing your grandfather's face in a Renaissance painting or your jealousy in a 19th-century novel. This recognition performs three miracles. It makes everywhere feel like home, cures loneliness by confirming your supposedly weird thoughts are normal, and articulates what you sense but cannot express. Yet even the finest books become silly, maniacal, constraining, false, and ridiculous to those who spend too long on them. Reading should be an incitement to spiritual life, not the spiritual life itself. Books introduce us to deeper seeing, but they don't constitute it. Publishers rejected Proust's manuscript because one character needed 30 pages to describe tossing in bed. An American reader begged him to explain himself in two lines. Monty Python mocked this with a game show challenging contestants to summarize all 7 volumes in 15 seconds. The joke captures our modern impatience, but reveals what we've lost. Proust believed compression destroys meaning. When newspapers gave a matricide gruesome few lines, he wrote 5 pages connecting it to Ajax, Oedipus, and King Lear, arguing we all share guilt toward our mothers. As we grow older, we kill all those who love us by the cares we give them. Excessive, or the only adequate response to tragedy? Great literature as news briefs. Verona youth commits suicide following girlfriend's death. Moscow woman throws herself under train. Events aren't inherently profound. Treatment makes them so. This philosophy extended everywhere. Proust found delight in train timetables, questioned diplomats about minute details, and believed soap advertisements could inspire thoughts as profound as Pascal's philosophy. His motto, n'allez pas trop vite, don't go too fast. Should we trust wisdom from someone whose life was a disaster? Proust endured debilitating asthma attacks up to 10 times daily, chronic digestive issues, and noise sensitivity so severe that a neighbor's toilet installation drove him to despair. He remained dependent on his mother and regularly announced his imminent death for 16 years. Yet from this suffering emerged profound insight. Proust argued that happiness benefits the body, but grief develops the mind's strengths. Pain forces us to analyze processes we'd otherwise ignore. When your relationship is smooth, you don't examine why. During a breakup, you become an amateur psychologist, dissecting every interaction. The truly wise must pass through suffering, but here's the crucial part. They must transform grief into ideas, because griefs, at the moment when they change into ideas, lose some of their power to injure our heart. Proust's characters demonstrate how not to handle suffering. Madame Verdurin dismisses elite gatherings as boring, rather than acknowledging her exclusion. Unlike these characters, Proust himself handled suffering admirably. Despite life-threatening asthma triggered by flowers, he never claimed nature was boring. Proust despised lazy expression, people calling the Mediterranean the big blue, or responding to Beethoven with vague humming. His complaint was psychological, not grammatical. Cliché's Gray's experiences surface while convincing us we've adequately described it. When a friend's manuscript featured moons shining discreetly, Proust offered instead the moon like an actress who does not have to come on for a while, a fresh metaphor capturing genuine impression. Against the literary establishment's belief that good writing meant following precedent, Proust argued, every writer is obliged to create his own language, as every violinist is obliged to create his own tone. This need for personal language surfaces in intimate naming. Though officially Valentin Louis Georges Eugène Marcel Proust, his mother called him Mon Petit Jaunette, my little yellow one. To his friend Reynaldo, he was Bunched. These names reflect genuine relationships in ways formal titles never could. Life is stranger than clichés suggest. After Proust's death, friends praised him as generous and charming, yet he believed friendship prevented access to one's true self, a contradiction revealing that relationships demand some insincerity to survive. You can privately think someone both pompous and charming, but voicing criticism jeopardizes the bond. When a former classmate who'd written a scathing review sent his own mediocre poetry, Proust responded with generous praise while keeping his harsher assessment in an unsent letter. This private space for unshared analysis became his solution, with his novel serving as an unusually long unsent letter. Unlike books, which distill our sporadic minds into inspired moments, conversation demands continuous responses, leaving us to regret both what we've said and missed saying. Proust recognized that friendship rarely involves effortless coincidence of interests, so he always asked questions and addressed others' concerns rather than risk boring them. The scorners of friendship can be the finest friends in the world because they approach relationships with realistic expectations. Stand in your kitchen. What do you see? Probably nothing remarkable. Just appliances, counters, clutter. Now imagine you're Chardin, the 18th century painter who transformed ordinary objects into revelations. A peach as pink and chubby as a cherubim. A skate with insides like the naves of a polychrome cathedral. This is Proust's challenge. Can we learn to see beauty in what habit has rendered invisible? The famous Madeleine scene, when the narrator tastes a cookie dipped in tea and suddenly relives his entire childhood, reveals how involuntary memory captures life's essential qualities while voluntary memory offers only imprecise facsimiles. The revelation wasn't that his childhood was extraordinary, but that his memory of it had been mediocre. This applies to relationships too. Constant availability diminishes our capacity to notice what we have. After 15 minutes with long-desired Gilbert, the narrator begins forgetting what life was like without her. Southwest of Chartres lies Hilaire's-Cambray, where competing bakeries sell the Madeleine of Marcel Proust. But this misses his point entirely. The true homage isn't visiting where he lived, but learning to see your own world through his attentive eyes. Close this summary. Look around your ordinary room, at your ordinary relationships, at your supposedly ordinary life. What have you stopped noticing? Proust spent his final years writing about hawthorn blossoms he could no longer safely approach. You don't have his limitations. Will you actually notice when you do?